ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 यथा Vyavahito Vahnir Darushveka Svayonishu Naneva Pati Vishvatma Bhuteshu Chatata Puman Yatha Vyavahito Vahnir Harushveka Svayonishu
Harushveka Svayonishu
Naneva Bhati Vishvatma
Naneva Bhati Vishvatma
Bhuteshu Chatata
Puman Bhuteshu Chatata Puman
Yatha Yavahito Vahnir
Yatha Yavahito Vahnir
Darushveka Svayonishu
Darushveka Svayonishu
Naneva Bhati Vishvatma
Naneva Bhati Vishvatma
Bhuteshu Chatata Puman
Bhuteshu Chatata Puman
Yatha Yavahito Vahnir
Yatha Yavahito Vahnir
Harushveka Svayonishu
Harushveka Svayonishu
Naneva Bhati Vishvatma
Naneva Bhati Vishvatma
Bhuteshu Chatata Puman
Bhuteshu Chatata Puman
Yatha as much as
he
exactly like
Abhahita
surcharged with
Vahni
fire
Darushu
in wood
Eka
One. Svayonishu.
Svayonishu.
The source of manifestation.
Nanaiva.
Like different entities.
Bhati.
Illuminates.
Vishvatma.
The Lord as Paramatma. Bhuteshu. In the living entities. Cha,
also.
And.
Tata.
In the same way.
Puman.
The absolute person. Translation. The Lord as Supersoul pervades all things, just as fire permeates wood, and so He appears to be one of many varieties, though He is the one. He is the absolute one without a second. Purport. Lord Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by one of His plenary parts, expands Himself all over the material world, and His existence can't be perceived even within the atomic energy. Matter, antimatter, proton, neutron, etc. are all different effects of the Paramatma feature of the Lord. As from wood, fire can be manifested, or as butter can be churned out of milk, so also the presence of the Lord as Paramatma can be felt by the process of legitimate hearing and chanting of the transcendental subjects which are especially treated in the Vedic literatures, like the Upanishads and Vedanta. Srimad Bhagavatam is the bona fide explanation of these Vedic literatures. The Lord can be realized through the oral reception of the transcendental message, and that is the only way to experience the transcendental subject. As fire is kindled from wood by another fire, the divine consciousness of man can similarly be kindled by another divine grace. His divine grace, the spiritual master, can kindle the spiritual fire from the wood-like living entity by imparting proper spiritual messages injected through the receptive ear. Therefore, one is required to approach the proper spiritual master with receptive ears only, and thus divine existence is gradually realized. The difference between animality and humanity lies in this process only. the human being can hear properly, whereas an animal cannot. Animality. Prabhupada's created that word, animality. So then here then the Paramatma is being described. Is now we're going through the creation, that Krishna has created the material world and he has entered it. So he's entered it here, Vasudeva is created in his pastimes. He's making this material world. Then is the Paramatma, he has entered into everything here. This is a secondary, the next expansion. Previously it was he expands into it as the potencies in everything. Then as Paramatma, then he enters into every living entity and into everything within that. So that combination of both, then Krishna is everywhere. So here Prabhupada is pointing out that's in everything. So even the atom, the smallest particle, Krishna is in it. Therefore it said smaller than the smallest. Whatever is the smallest element within the material world and whatever is the smallest within the spiritual, you have the jiva, then Krishna's entered that. So he's smaller than anything. At the same time, is bigger than the biggest, because he is largest manifestation is Karana Daksha Vishnu. And he's one quarter of the cosmic creation, and he is that size. So you don't get bigger than that. And so then, he's bigger than the biggest, smaller than the smallest. So he is everywhere. So that is the position. So now the important point is that's just where he's situated. He's there. So that's good. That's nice. But the thing is to see him there. That's the important thing. How to see. Because by that vision, then that changes how you look at things, your value system, everything. That's important. How you view things is actually the most important element in the life. What is your view on things? How do you perceive them? How do you judge or value something? Because that actually is what makes up your consciousness. Is your inherent consciousness is what is your value system. That's the most important element. Because otherwise what happens is we take it for granted. We see something, we say that's good. We see another thing, we say that's bad. We see another thing, we're not sure. We don't think about it, but why do we think this is good, that's bad, that's not, I'm not sure? Because of our value system. The standard by which we judge everything. There's nothing that we're not looking at, and anything that comes into our purview of analyzation according to our nature. It means everybody will analyze something different and unique. The approach will be slightly different. But the principle is the same, is that you're going to analyze everything you come in contact with that you actually perceive. You may not perceive. I think it's said that 40,000 bits of information from all the five senses come in every minute. Like that. So a huge volume is there of what's going on. Everything's going on. We're hearing them over in that building over there, this, that. So many different things are there. But that's the first stage of the mind. It's just these pulls in everything from the senses. All the information is pulled in. The second stage is then it reduces it down to what is the focus at the present. So if you have focus, it reduces it to something. If you don't have focus, you're distracted. So when it reduces it down to something, then it focuses, this is exactly what I want to deal with. Then the next thing it does is it goes into the memory. What is the previous experience on this? So this is where the value system starts to come in. Is that it goes, what is the experience before? What has been done before? So this will be happening. And it will, from the memory, which is part of the intelligence, but the mind has direct access to that. That's where the common point between the mind and intelligence lies. So then, seeing that, at the fourth thing, make a decision on if that experience is good, bad, or otherwise. And then the fifth is then we see the action. We actually see that whatever is the sense object that we are focusing on, then we see that that is applied. So what you'll perceive is the fifth. You can maybe see from the subtle the fourth. But the others are just happening very quickly. So this is what's going on. So everything is pulled in. So now, then is what is that value system that you use? What is, how, where does that come from? How has that been established? This is a very important thing for every devotee to contemplate, is that we have an opinion on everything. It's just, where does it come from? Where did we get it from? Is it good? You know, can we be confident that that value is good for our Krishna consciousness, or is it not? Because whatever it is, we're just going to automatically react. This is our subconscious. We're just going to react in that way. Whatever it is, that situation comes up, we will automatically react in that way. Because that's our system that we judge it by. The mind will go through those stages, and the fourth stage, it'll go, okay, here it is. This is what I'm going to do. So unless you change the experience, so that's called samskar. Samskar means putting in experiences that are going to have an effect on your life in a progressive way. Right? That's the how we use it. Samskar in general just means what is the impression. Right? So anything can impress you. Yes?
Triggering.
Triggering. What triggers?
How do you use it? Education.
How they use in education, how, what triggers the particular experience in that. So is that, that is samskar. When that is seen, then that samskar creates an impression. And that impression then becomes how you will then judge your experiences around you, everything around you. So it's very important to look at that very carefully. What is the samskar we have? Because sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not good. And the background of our experiences, due to our previous karma, we have so many samskars that will create our value system, our way of perceiving and viewing the world. So then, when we look at that, it'll go on automatic. This is the main point, is that automatically you will just function in that way. That's the modes of nature. What you've experienced, you're going to judge it on that. You had a bad experience in a particular area, even though everyone else has had a good experience, you're not going to look at it in a good light. You're going to have a doubt. You know, you'll say no, but 9 out of 10 are saying yes, so then there's a doubt. Right? Doubt means is that intelligence sees one side, but mind sees another. So therefore there's a doubt. Or sometimes it can also be intelligence sees two different elements it can't bring together. So then, with that point, I seem to have lost the point. The machine went on, and the point went out. Okay.
The mind, intelligence, sometimes it too.
Yeah, but then that was because that was the tangent that could have gone off, but that I was trying to keep it back on the point. That was the last. Oh, yes, okay. From the experience, yes. So then, from that experience, so now through intelligence, you can analyze our experiences and see if what we have gained from that experience is the best application. Because you can gain so many things from any experience. So now if that experience, you have to see if you have fully gained what is needed, or what you have gained, is it actually the good angle? Because you could get different angles off of it. That's the point, is you could get different angles off of any experience. So now whenever you see something happens and you react, you know, either in a positive way or negative way, then you just have to trace back, where does that come from? Why is it like that? That will be the principle. So then with the intelligence, then you can restructure your value system. Right? So now then Prabhupada points out is then that is done by the process of hearing. Hearing is the most important. It's the most effective of all the senses. It goes the deepest like that. Is the hearing then can go penetrate all the way down to the consciousness. Other things don't go that far. Because the chit potency moves through that. So by hearing, then everything else, then the senses can be connected. Like we see the Lord. But non-devotees, others see the Lord. They don't see the Lord. They perceive a shape, but they don't actually see the Lord. We see the Lord because of hearing from authority that this is the Lord. So then the other four senses function. So it's the most important of all the senses, because it can cut through all the way to the consciousness. So that is therefore important. Then we must hear from, here Prabhupada says, legitimate hearing. That means it must be proper from authority. Then by that, then these transcendental subjects can be understood. Now here he's mentioning Upanishads and Vedanta, because this is a specific class of hearing. Is that the Vedic literatures, the Veda has everything in it. That's the meaning. Veda just means knowledge. So all knowledge is in the Veda. There's nothing that's not discussed in the Veda. Now, of that, then the most important is Vedanta. So that is given in the Upanishads and what we know as Vedanta Sutra. And then Prabhupada says, so that is what is actually going on, because by Vedanta you see the Lord. That is the element. By the other subjects you don't necessarily see the Lord. You see something else that you could see the Lord through. It's like the other senses. That you could see the Lord through those, hear the Lord, smell the Lord, touch the Lord, but you only know it's the Lord through the hearing. So the Vedanta is what is heard, what is the essence, so that you can see the Lord in whatever you're dealing with, whatever it is. So those become the most important, but then it must be applied, because the Upanishad will state that these things, he is greater than the greatest, he's smaller than the smallest, he walks, he does not walk, he's near, but he's very far away. This is how the Upanishads, they point out, the one who does not injure any living creature, then he knows, he will attain the supreme destination. But you have to know how to apply it. That means I just don't go out and step on anybody or something. So that means James are going to attain the supreme position. No, but this goes beyond, not injure any living entity. So that includes the soul. So that means not recognizing that the soul is servant of God, that's violence. Right? Not acknowledging our relationship as servant to Krishna, then that's violence towards that relationship. It's unprogressive. So therefore we need explanation of that and what it looks like. So then comes to the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the Bhagavatam then becomes the actual important literature. It is actually the Vedic literature. The Vedas are there. Everything's based on the Veda. You have to have the authority. But within that, then Bhagavatam becomes the literature. It's the superior of all literatures, because it shows exactly what is the essence. What is the Veda actually trying to say? So then that is, of all the bona fide literatures, they're all trying to say what the Bhagavatam says. But the Bhagavatam then expresses it perfectly, clearly, with no doubt, no distraction. You can't get distracted by your astrology or your Ayurveda or your Dharma or your Niti or your arts and science, other sciences. You can't get distracted, because all it is bhakti. Bhakti related then to those subjects. But it's only showing the pure devotional element of all the branches of Vedic knowledge. So therefore it becomes special. So now, hearing that, then the Lord can be realized. So seeing is the first thing, then realize is the next. If you don't see, you won't realize. That's the important. You first have to see, then you can realize. So the first step is jnana. Then, from practice, you get vidyan. So therefore, all knowledge starts with hearing. From hearing, then we contemplate it, we practice it, and from that combination, then we'll realize. So realization, then, is what actually works for us. That's where your value system is. Otherwise, you'll be working with a secondary value system. You won't be really working with a very dynamic value system. Because that realization, it must get you Krishna. Otherwise, your value system might be getting you something less. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. These are the options that you can get from your value system. But it should be your value system gets you bhakti. It'll work. It has to function in these realms of dharma, artha, kama, moksha. That's human experience. So you have to have the values in all of those. But unless the value gives you bhakti, then it's not really progressive. It may look progressive, that it's more towards moksha or more towards dharma, but they turn into the other. They move back and forth. From dharma, then you get opulence. From opulence, you get sense gratification. Sense gratification, you say this is nonsense, you go for liberation. Liberation, you get bored. You come back down to dharma, artha, kama. So it's not actually progressive. Progressive means you go out, finish. So you use these methods. You use these elements, but the value system has to be bhakti. Right? So that is gained by hearing, and hearing from authorities that speak on the transcendental subject matter from the viewpoint of Bhagavatam. Then you can explain it in any form, just like you have in writing. There are so many genres of writing. So in the same ways, there's all these different groups or categories of Vedic presentation of knowledge. Same knowledge, just different presentation. So then we'll call it by a different subject. Right? That's basically what's going on. Modern, we don't think of that. The disciplines are separated. One group is completely separate from the other, right? We, as laymen, will think science. Yes, it's one group. But the scientists don't think like that. They have the hard sciences and the soft sciences. Then of the hard sciences, then there's the real ones, and then there's the Mickey Mouse ones, right? Physics is real, chemistry is Mickey Mouse. Like that, you know? At least according to physicists. I'm sure chemist or biologist might have a different opinion. You know, it's like, you know, okay, you have your atoms, but they're made up of our chemicals. You know, so it's like, you know, like this. Yeah, but it only functions in your chemical reaction because of our physics. So like this, they can go on. So within it, it's the same topic. It's just different approach and language. What are you taking? You know, the gross manifestations of their interactions and transformations, or the more fundamental, what's going on, you know? It means we see the chemicals. That's what we see. We don't see the atoms. But the chemicals are working because of the atoms. So that's the whole dynamics. The same thing, just which angle you look at it. When you take the chemistry, then what you end up with after that, then you see that. That's your product. So you could discuss the product, you could discuss the, you know, creation of the product, you could discuss the elements that the product is based on. Does that make sense? How it's one subject matter, but just different ways of presentation? Yeah. So then, by that method, then the Upanishad is one way of presenting it. You know, your Dharma Shastra is another way of presenting it. Then your drama, Natya Shastra, is another way of presenting it. Same subject, you only have Krishna. But Krishna in his manifestations of his energies, how they manifest, to view it for a particular purpose. You know, you want to get singing, then you have to know the science, how it works there. You want to get chanting, then you have to know it from that angle. Right? You want to know dance, then it's another. You want to know architecture, it's another. But it's the same subject, just looked at from a different angle. So that's the principle, is that Bhagavatam then is giving everything. It can kindle the fire anywhere. That's the thing. You have a block of wood, and you can say, this is the bark, you know, this is the, you know, main part, and this is the inside. And I'm sure, you know this big science and the whole how, but you can light it anywhere, it burns. So that's the point, is from the Bhagavatam, by this transcendental knowledge, it can be ignited to any part of our existence. Doesn't matter what subject it is, because Bhagavatam is the perfection or the conclusion of every branch of knowledge and everything in our experience. So we can take that, then we will be able to apply it in our life with that attitude, you know, and that will create our values. So then it's mentioned here is that must be gotten. Fire comes from fire, so that must be gotten from transcendental source. So we have to hear from authority, hear from the Parampara. By hearing from that Parampara, then the fire within us of that transcendental knowledge is then ignited. And then it mentions that receptive ears only. That's the approach. When the ears are receptive, then we get somewhere. Receptive doesn't mean we don't question. Questioning is a symptom of intelligence. That must be there. The Vedic system is question and answer. So that, and therefore we see is that in all spheres where there is, discussion based on knowledge, it's always question and answer. Whether it's a Vedic forum, whether it's a scientific forum, whether it's a social, political, educational, they'll all use the same principle. Someone will make some statements, then they'll throw it open for questions, that will come up, then answers will be given, it goes back and forth, you know, like this. So it's just a fundamental principle. So if you really want to hear, then we can learn. So we have to be receptive. And we have to be ready that what we hear may be different from what our value system is. That's why we have to be open to look at our value system and really decide, is it up to standard? Is it actually a standard value system? You know? Or it's pretty, you know, or what is good and what is not? What within the value system is weak? You know? Because everybody, if we think about it, we can find some weakness that we have. There's something there that is not up to standard. We all know that something's there. So then we have to look at it. Why is that? And then we'll see. You know, all our, generally if you go into it, the bad standards all have generally six sources, right? Lust, anger, greed, envy, attachment, and illusion. Right? Generally, you look in there, then always these gentlemen seem to be the, they're always the basis of the value system. You see one of them or a combination of them sitting there. Somehow they all get along. I'm not sure how, but they all get along with each other. You know? Like that. So then, that is there. So if that receptivity is there, then we can gain. Then we can contemplate. We may have doubts. That's the point. If we didn't have doubts, we wouldn't be here, right? That's the thing. We have a doubt that if I give this up, that there'll be something there, right? You see, an inchworm, it doesn't put its foot down in the front, and lift up the back until the front is fully down. So there's a doubt that yes, if I give this all up, then I will actually be happy. You know, that's faith. That faith that, yes, I can just leave this, and what I'm looking for is there. Right? At least that much. At least it should be equal. Right? Let alone that it's unlimited in compared to, you know, minuscule. But that principle is that I have to be able to accept that. So that's the thing is, doubts will be there. And that's understood. Misgivings are there. A doubt means it's not clear. Right? You see this, you see that, it doesn't quite add up. That's a doubt. Misgiving is you've thrown in there emotion, is that you have your experience, it was bad. So even though theoretically it could be good, you can't accept it. That's misgiving. A doubt can be cleared, a misgiving is very hard to deal with because you have to get down to the root of what that misgiving is, what it is from. What's the cause of it? And it's generally something that has affected the senses, the mind, you know, our ego, or something of value has been seriously affected. So it creates a misgiving. Like that. So it doesn't make sense, but it's the way it works. Right? It doesn't make sense that the cow sees anything red and it gets afraid. It's just something red. Some red cloth or a red barn or like this. But because they equate red with fire when they were in the barn that went caught on fire. Therefore, anything red is bad. So that's a misgiving. Red is bad. No. It's a matter, you can have a doubt, you know, is this red? Is this red the same as that red? You know, if it is, then it's not good. But if it's not, then okay, we can discuss. That's a doubt. Misgiving is red's bad. Finish. It doesn't matter what you say. No. Like that. So misgivings are, that's why you always see Prabhupada says doubts and misgivings. He doesn't just say one or the other. He generally uses them together. Because the one is lighter, the one's more intellectual, the one is emotional. So one's the mind, one's the intelligence. So then by hearing, all that can be adjusted. Because you hear how others have done this, been successful, all these things, so that will please the mind. You know, it will work. The intelligence sees this is practical. It's logical. So both are happy. And it creates a new identity. Not a new identity, but it defines your identity that you can do it nicely. Right? It defines it that you can do it nicely. So by that, then we can see, okay, I could have this identity, and the identity is not bad. Right? The intelligence is satisfied, the mind satisfied. Then we accept it. Then it becomes our value. So that's the process. So by hearing, you can clear. Right? Means we're sleeping, we're dreaming. But by sound, the person can be awoken. And then the one fades, and the other one comes. So that's by hearing. So it's the most dynamic of all that. So Prabhupada makes the last. This is the distinction between animal and human. Animal can't hear, human does. Right? Animal, you have to get out the stick, you know, the new rolled up newspaper. Something has to be gotten out. But for the human, then hearing, then that is the main. Okay. So any questions, comments, or yes? What are one's qualifications to hear Vedanta and Upanishads? Okay. Qualifications or difference between Bhagavatam and Vedanta. Basically, Vedanta, technically, there's no difference between Bhagavatam is Vedanta. It's just the practical exposition of Vedanta, how to apply it in our life. Like you have Katha Upanishad, okay, Natikechas, is that how you say it? Natikechas. Nachiketas, yeah. So his father, Prabhupada tells a story, his father was doing some kind of program, and he was giving in charity. His father was exceedingly poor. So then he had this, he was giving this cow in charity to another Brahmin. This cow was not a, you know, I don't think it either gave milk or had much milk. It's very skinny. You know, so there's basically nothing you could, great benefit from the cow. So Nachiketas was feeling uncomfortable that his father wants to do something nice, but because of his, you know, poverty, he is unable to do something really good. So then he thought, well, maybe he could give me in charity to someone and I could be of some use in that way and go do service for somebody. So he asked his father, who will you give me to? So his father took it that he was criticized, you know, making a comment on, you know, he's giving away this bad cow. So then he cursed him that he would, you know, go, I'm giving you to Yama, you know. So then immediately then Nachiketas left for Yama's abode. So he arrived at Yama's abode. But Yamaraj wasn't there. He was out for some reason. So Nachiketas sat there for 3 days, you know, no food, no water, no reception. And there he's Brahmin. So when Yamaraj came back, he was mortified that a Brahmin had been waiting at his door with no attention for 3 days. So he brought him and he was feeling very bad. And so then he said, so he should give him some boon. So then he asked, you know, so then Nachiketas says, you know, you define for me, you know, what is the nature of the soul, transcendence. Yamaraj said, okay, let us try another approach here. I'll give you sovereignty over the universe. I'll give you unlimited wealth. I'll give you, you know, whatever you want. Like that. Don't ask for this one. And not to get why, because the others are easy. This one's hard. So then not to get known, but this is just what I want to know. So then he explained to him the science of the soul. So that kata means what? Discussion. That's a discussion between Yamaraj and this Nachiketas. So it's just describing there what is the nature of the soul, how to see the soul, this and that, but you don't see it applied. So that's why the Bhagavatam, so then what is being said, it's a whole conversation. What's the essence? That's Vedanta. Right? So it doesn't even have the story to keep the attention. But the Bhagavatam then takes that essence and then applies it in the life of great Vaishnavas so it can be heard. So the Purana as a medium is the best medium, you know, especially in the Kali Yuga. It's the fifth Veda. Because by that, you get the knowledge and you see its application. So you get precept and example, both in one place. So it becomes very good. Because in other ages, people could hear the Upanishad, take from that their intelligence to Vedanta, then contemplate it, and then in this way come to a conclusion after, you know, much time and effort. But they could get there. They had the intelligence, that determination, focus they could do. But in this age, there's too much distraction. So actually the Purana becomes actually the most prominent of all the bodies of all the Vedas. Like that. So it becomes the preeminent science, actually. And of Puranas, then Bhagavatam is the supreme. Because it gives, its focus is on the Vedanta. Like that. How to know the Lord in that. So anyone can hear Vedanta. But the form in which they'd be most pleased to hear it would most likely be Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam's the general. To hear the Upanishads of Vedanta means that one would have an interest or inclination in kind of like grammatical analysis of the philosophy. Very logical, grammatical, just, you know, mathematical, that kind of an approach. That's the Upanishadic approach. So it's very important, and all devotees can accommodate it to some degree or another. But it's a matter of whether they can make that as a major focus. If they can, then we also see Gita does the same thing. It's also Upanishad, Gita Upanishad. So you see that more of that Upanishadic approach in the last six chapters, like that. That is like how the Upanishads present. Just analyzing material nature, breaking it down into its elements. So in the process, you lose all the experience, social experiences and all those different kinds of things. And it's just broken down into the nuts and bolts, and that's it. Then from there, you build it up again. In other words, you break the material energy down to its elements so that you've lost all the value system in all this, you know, opulence, wealth and position and fame and family and land and children, all these different things. You've broken it down into just what its elements are. Then from there, you build it back up again so it comes back up to your life. Right? But now, it's specifically the main focus of the renounced order because they don't have to build it back up. They only have to build it up to the specific areas of what they deal in, and that's all. They don't have to build it back up to the grihastha level. So for that, then you'll get the most example from Bhagavatam, from the Puranas. Because the Bhagavatam then will show, because you see in there most that are the examples that's given about are grihasthas. Right? Like that. Very few are not. Markandeya is not. You know, there. Means your Sukadeva, these others are not the main characters who are speaking. But the stories that they're telling generally are always within the social scene. Like that. Because the point applies for both. You make a point about the proper etiquette and behavior, you know, within the grihastha ashram, it applies from the sannyas. You can take the essence out of it. Like that. Because the sannyasi is supposed to take essence, so he'll see it, he'll take the essence. The grihastha is applying. So essence may be gotten to or not immediately. So therefore, the Purana will be better. So if you present for them the Upanishadic thing, if they're like that kind of way, then it'll have some use. But practical is like you have to work the ashram today. You can't leave it till tomorrow. You can't say, okay, let's sit down and study and all this and that. But you have to pay the bills today. You have to feed everybody today. You have to interact with them today. So then it needs immediate result. And that Bhagavatam then gives that. It gives immediate, here's the philosophy, here's the culture of application. So you get them both. So therefore anybody can hear who wants to hear like that. But it's just a matter of what combination is best. But Bhagavatam, you know, is guaranteed like that. And hearing from the Upanishadic angle is important because eventually we have to come to the point to break down our attachments to the material energy like that. But, you know, that can come when it comes or, you know, with the nature. Does that make some sense?
Realize it's important to hear the proper guidance, to get the proper angle.
Yeah, the angle is everything.
There's one level of one being an unsteady devotional service. And you read the scriptures, and then he decides, I'll make my family Krishna conscious. Then he goes, moves on, and he reads how if your life is useless, it's a dark well. So he gets his
decides to get himself a flashlight. Yeah, that's what it's kalpa, what is it? Sankalpa vikalpa?
Vyudha
vikalpa. Huh? Vyudha vikalpa, yeah. Is that in the it's part of the doubts. You know, you see both how you can do. It can be engaged, but it's useless, and you know, so you get stuck and you end up doing nothing. So. That's the,
due to our lack of perception, the soul is so much engrossed with so much different elements, plus the modes, plus the different pleasures, plus the different illusions. So it's not better to just for the disciple to take the point of vision of the guru or the scriptures.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's the best.
The value system set by the guru, shastra, and sadhana.
Yeah. I mean, the best is on that value system. Because what we were meaning before is not that that's not where we're going to get it from. It's just that we're pointing it out that it needs to be looked at. It's an important element. It needs to be seen, addressed, because otherwise, by habit, we won't, because it's been so much part of us, our value system, that we don't analyze it. You know, like the mind comes up with something, we'll just say, this is what I want. No, this is what the mind has come up with. So it was telling me yesterday that they would see this devotee, and he'd be sitting there alone, and suddenly he'd start to smile and start to laugh. Oh, what are you laughing about? He says, my mind's just come up with the most stupid stuff. You know, it's just, because the mind just, that's all it does. It's just by the value system, is trying to analyze every situation and try to see how it can get profit out of it. That's all. That's what it does. So it just looks and then tries to put together something that basically seems to be, you know, practical according to the value system you've chosen. You know, if the value system you've chosen has to be logical, then it will look for which is the most logical solution. If it's not, if it's emotional or it's money or whatever is the position that we're taking, is what is the profit and what method we will use to get that profit. The mind will just automatically come up with things. It just uses the intelligence to get all that work done. But that's just what it does, because we put the value system. We'll say, oh, my mind is doing this. No, because mind's only doing what value system we've given it. That's the thing. The mind won't do something that we're not interested. You, mind is totally absorbed in something, and then something comes up that is more valuable to us that previous things just dropped. Right? It means you may be talking so many things, but you're hungry, and then somebody brings along something nice to eat that you like, you completely forget what you were doing before to sit down and start eating. You know, and then the phone rings, and then you forget about eating, and you get up and go answer the phone. So it's like, it's just a and the mind just forgets it, just drops it. So it simply goes on, where's the prominence in the values?
Whereas in the original value system, the value system of the soul,
is there original value system of the soul? Yeah, it's the same. It means it's the means it'll be unique in each soul, but the basic fundamentals are this are in their pure state in the spiritual world, and the same value system is there in the material world, perverted. That's why you always have to get down to that level of looking at the value system, like that. So hearing from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra then becomes the most important, because then that gives us the angle of what value system to have, and therefore what result you get. Right? Because your value is what you're trying to achieve. So that will then define your method. Right? Does that make sense? You have to have an identity of who you are and what you're dealing with. So that's the first part of your value system, is who we are and what everything else is that we're dealing with. Is it desirable or not? It's desirable because it relates to us, it matches us. It's undesirable because it doesn't have a relationship with us. So first thing to do is establish the relationship. So that's the first value system. What is the relationship of us with everything that we come in contact with? The second one is, what is the goal that we want from that relationship? What we will get from that interaction of us with whatever we've come in contact with. Whatever it is, you know, a person, place, or thing, it doesn't matter. What is the value we want to get from it? Then, once that's been identified, then the next thing will be, what is the method we're going to use to get it? Like that. So, that's your fundamental value system. From that, then, what is our identity? That's manifold. What is others' identity? That's also. And then, what we want to gain, you know, and then the methods to get there. Then the point is now, do we have, is it intelligent? Is our methods match what we want? Right? So, we have to see that it actually practically works. Because otherwise it may not. It may not be well thought out. Therefore sometimes the mind and intelligence will fight. Because intelligence says it's not the way, and the mind doesn't care. It just wants. You know, like little kids, they want something. So then, just because they want, they figure they should get. But no, there's a method to get. You know, so then their methods aren't good. You know? So that's the thing. Adult, a mature adult means their methods are more efficient, more well thought out. They match. They have a clear value system in that. You know, or more expanded. It's not just self-centered. It does accommodate others. You know. Like that. The more mature, the more it accommodates. The less mature, the less it accommodates. Like that. So that must be understood from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So that's important that we get it there. But now the spiritual means is that I am servant of Krishna. And Krishna is the Lord. Right? So I am servant. So that establishes that relationship. So then all aspects of identity, of details of that value, will all be based on that I am servant. Material though, I am Lord. I am God. So we cut God out of the picture, right? There's ourselves and God. So there's a relationship. We cut God out of it. So it's just us as God. So then that's where the impersonalism comes in. Because we haven't accommodated God. So our fundamental point of us establishing all relationships is not actually personal, it's impersonal. Because we're supposed to be God. And it might work if we were. But the problem is that everybody else thinks they're God. Right? So it just doesn't work. Right? You know, it's like, you have two bowls. Okay, great. But if you have a bowl and a spoon, then you have something's dynamic. Right? You know, unless one bowl is a little bit smaller than the other, then I guess you could use it to, you know, or pour a lot of it from one bowl into the other bowl and then drink out of it. Yeah, I mean, so you could... You could try to get something to work. So that's material life, is we try to take two gods and somehow or another work it out that one of them accepts the position of assistant god and the other is Lord God, you know, master god, and, you know, like on the computer you have the, you know, the
the master drive and the slave drive. Like, you know, these kind of things. So that's how you work it out. And so then in this situation, okay, one concedes, but then you just move it from the living room to the kitchen and it switches completely, you know, and then it goes to the bathroom and it's another thing. And then in this part of the bathroom is this way and that one is that way. So it's a problem because the fundamental point of trying to establish our value system is already wrong. That's why unless we hear from authority, that's why hearing is important, then how would one reestablish a value system? Because it's wrong from the start. Our goal is wrong. It's supposed to be pleasing Krishna is the goal. But we've made, and then all values connected with that, details, how to please. Mother Yashoda has one way, the gopis have another, the cowherd boy is another, the cow is another. You know, and within that, each individual has their method, their particular taste, their particular rasa. But we're supposed to be the enjoyer. So right there, that means every then decision that's made after that has to be wrong. You know, probably gives an example. You have a huge mathematical equation, but if in the beginning one calculation's off, the whole thing's off. So then, and then our method then is that just comes to be practical. Instead of devotional service, then it's material, it's fruit of activity. Right? Because devotional service means you want a fruit, and that fruit is enjoyed by Krishna. And the material is the fruit is enjoyed by ourself. So when it's done for Krishna, we call it devotion. When it's done for ourselves, it's called fruit. So like that, then you see it's the same thing, it's just become perverted. That's all. So the main two to catch is the first two. Is who we are, what we're dealing with, and what's the goal of that. If those can be straightened out, then the method automatically is adjusted. Because the same thing, you want to cook for Krishna, cook for yourself. It's the same process like that. So that's not the important element. The important element is how to connect into Krishna. That's the real important element.
Whereas by lack of knowledge, we apply in the wrong way, and then we get the wrong experience, then we have a misgiving.
Yes.
And then we think the summarizing of misgivings, we should change the original recipe.
Yes.
This is wrong.
That's wrong. It's a common thing, because the mind, everything we do is based on the mind. You know? So that becomes, for us, very important. Is our experience. Because when everything comes down, it's all experience. Rasa is the bottom line of everything. The tattva is there to understand and enhance, sort of like that. But we have a taste that we get out of something we wanted to get, the experience was bad, so therefore we dropped the whole thing. But the point is that, like you're saying, that is due to lack of knowledge. Because then, and ego is that because we applied it didn't work, therefore it has to be wrong, not that I could be wrong. Because humility, then if that's there, the process works. That's why in the Shikshastaka the process part is explained through that point of humility. You know, that Trinadapi Sumichena. So then that aspect there is the attitude of devotional service. By that, then you can get it done. That is our culture. If you can take anything, is that the culture is very broad, but the essence of it is those four points. Being humble, tolerant, offering respects to others, not wanting any respect for yourself. If those four can be followed, all other points of etiquette are automatic. There's nothing outside those four. Like that. That's the main principle. So they take care of it. So if that's there, everything else will work. Then we can get something from it. Therefore, the Prabhupada says the receptive ear, like that, is that we want to hear. Then the authority will give, and then it will work. So even if we have a misgiving, because of that faith and authority, we're willing to leave that. But without faith, we'll never leave it. So that's the difficulty. If faith becomes reduced, the process won't work, because the whole process is based on faith. From Shraddha, then comes the next. So even though one may be on a higher level, if that Shraddha is minimized, then the process stops working to that degree it's minimized. Like that, or even stops. Because without the faith, it doesn't matter. So that's why it says, prema is fully mature faith. You have complete faith in Krishna. Like that. And below that means faith is there, but it hasn't matured to its topmost. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You're saying one part that when you move through the different levels of devotions between heart and struggle, that you don't move to the next one until you actually achieve that level. So you don't move to Ramshram until it's established.
Yeah, basically. That means, oh.
Sorry, how much, you're just saying to him, if there's any element of faith that goes away or is abandoned, then you come back down.
Yeah.
How much of it?
Means come down means you don't leave the level of your realization. Means one is advanced, let's say, up to a higher level, but one loses faith, that point in devotional service is not lost, just they stop functioning on it. So it may appear by functioning they're working on a lower level. But as soon as you clear that problem, then immediately they're back where they were. You know, that's the beauty of devotional service. It's not lost. But other forms are lost. So it's, you progress, let's say 60%, then, and you fall from that position, you've lost it. But devotional service, then it remains. That's the nice thing about it. So it's each one of the nine processes is always going on, but it's developing. So it's which one is prominent at the time in development, then it's called by that stage. Like that. That's the principle. Is that there always Shraddha is always there. You know, then it means the higher one already includes the lower one. Like Sadhusanga already includes faith, because without faith you wouldn't associate. Bhajana Kriya all already includes association of faith, because devotional practices are done in the assembly association of devotees under their direction. Then anartha nivritti includes the other two, because you won't get rid of the anarthas unless you're practicing in the association of devotees with faith. You won't become fixed unless you remove the anarthas by the association of devotees with faith, like this, you know, in the devotional practices. Taste means is you won't have taste unless you're stable in devotional service, unless the anarthas are removed, because you have a taste for anarthas, not for the name. You know, and so then that will mean that you're doing that in the association of devotees with faith. You know, then the attachment comes because you have the taste. If you don't have taste, you won't be attached. Right? And ecstasy you won't have unless there's attachment. Right? And prema you won't have if there's no ecstasy. Right? So each one already includes the other ones. Therefore, it's on the higher level. It includes it plus more. So we see the material. So that's the spiritual world. As you add, it goes higher. Material world, as you add, it goes lower. You know, it's like you have ether, which is just one quality of hearing. Then you add in the touch. Then you get air. You add in form, you get fire. You add in taste, you get water. And you add in smell, you get earth. So earth has all five, but it's the lowest element. So that's the difficulty. And then the intelligence and these other, then they're more subtle. You know, like that. So that's the difficulty is here, is these principles that would look to be elevating are actually degrading. And what's degrading, you know, what would think to be degrading, demeaning, is actually elevating. I'm the big guy, how do I become humble? It looks like it's going in the wrong direction. You know, you're supposed to go from, you know, wimp to, you know, big guy to pure devotee, right? That would be the natural progression, right? But, you know, so you're supposed to go from big guy to, you know, humble servant to pure devotee. that's it. Okay. Yes, Rahim?
It sounds like your body change is based on realization. So I'm just wondering, how can you ensure that that experience and hearing actually translate into realization, and that actually in turn translates into real body change? Does it have to be conscious?
Yeah, it needs to be conscious. That's the principle, is that contemplation becomes the most important. That's why you see in education it's always a important element of developing the powers of analyzation and application. You're always trying to develop that point, because the knowledge is great, but unless you apply it, then it doesn't have a meaning. Does that make sense? So that's why you see any educationalist from any discipline is always trying to create, you know, critical and creative intelligence. They're always, you know, or not to say critical, analytical and creative intelligence. Because that will then get success in whatever field it is. No matter what you want to do, you have to have that to be successful. And if you analyze people who are successful in any branch of art or science or knowledge, it's because they have those two. They're able to analyze the field, and they're able to, in an inspired way, apply it. Like that. So that's the key, the connection, is the contemplation and practice. If those two are in place, and that's done on based on authority, then the chit potency will be there. Then we will get realization. And that realization then actually is the knowledge. I mean the value. The value is just the applied realization. Like that. So that's the process. First you hear, though. First, because otherwise how do you know what it is? You have to hear first. Then hearing, then you will contemplate it, how to apply it. The contemplation means you think about it to get to understand it. Then when you understand, it doesn't stop there. That's the...
Check. After understanding, you have to check.
You have to apply it. That's the point Prabhupada makes about the armchair philosopher. They only analyze, and they've analyzed it, then they feel they've conquered it. But they have to take it a step further, they have to apply it. That's why you see that you have this weakness in all spheres. Is that you're Vedic, then you'll have the grammarians and logicians, that's all they do. They never apply it in their life. Like that. Or in your Western Academy, then you'll have that they just analyze and come up with theories and that on some subject matter, but they never apply it in their life, you know. They're a social anthropologist, but they don't apply those ancient principles in their life. They never do.
Evolution.
Yeah, it's just their value is just intellectual stimulation, so therefore that's enough for them. You know, it's like for the logician, for the grammarian, just that they can analyze it and to taste that, it's enough for them. So that's why it's always mentioned, the dry speculators and these scientists and these dry academics, all these different people, they're all put on the side by the acharyas. You know, and you can see in the material sphere, those who actually make the material energy, you know, are the instruments for making it move, they basically disregard these people. Because they just don't see it as practical. It's got to be practical. You know, that's their principle. It has to hit the ground. Otherwise, what's the meaning? So So, first you have to hear from right authority, otherwise then your whole foundation will be wrong. Then contemplating that means how to apply it in my life. That's the contemplation. It means first you have to analyze, it means contemplate it to understand what are all the elements and this and that and how they interact with each other. Then once that's done, you have to see how does that apply in my life, because if it doesn't apply in the life, you won't do it. That's the principle. You know, unless it applies, you're not going to make the endeavor. Right? Why would you waste your time if it's not going to do something for you? You know, or it's in some way connected to your relationships. Maybe doing service for another, you know, friend or family member. you don't particularly get the direct benefit, right? But it's within your value system to have those relationships, right? It means it enhances the relationship, therefore it attains your values. Does that make some sense? You do that for them, but it enhances the relationship, because that's what you're looking for, is the rasa, the interaction. So then it doesn't matter. And if one's on the lower level, one sees, what do I directly get out of it? You know? So it's just, how big is your picture? That means the more mature. So when Krishna is pleased, he is the cosmic creation. It means the whole cosmic creation is pleased. So that's the biggest viewpoint. Then it starts to function. Then it starts to work. So by contemplating and practicing, then we get realization. Just like I myself was noticing the other day, is that cooking was in the kitchen with so many great cooks, and they would be doing certain things, but they had never explained that what they were doing was a certain aspect of cooking. You know, I thought it was part of another aspect. And you see it, you see what they do, but then now it's like, with some of these, it's 20... Yeah, it could be 20 years since I've seen the technique. But because I never applied it, I never connected between the theory and the practical. You know that it should do, but you don't really know how it does it unless you apply it. So now, 20 years later, I'm trying to apply that technique and trying to get back to what it was. So you have to, the two have to go together. So when you're studying hearing something, if that time is contemplated and practiced, then you get the most benefit out of it. It'll be the most efficient. Because otherwise, if you leave it, then you may miss something, you know. Plus, you don't have that source to go back to. That makes sense. Yes.
It's interesting because you're talking about hearing, contemplation, and application, and that's the three commands: shabda, anumana, and pratyaksha. Mm-hmm. And so then the combination of those three gives the actual realization.
Yeah, but it all has to be based on shabda. That's the principle. Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah. Yes.
I would like to know the difference between Raga Nuga Bhakti and Raga Bhakti.
Raga Nuga and Raga. It's the same thing. It means it's Rag Bhakti. In it, you have Raga Nuga and Rag Atmika. That's the actual. Because Rag is like, what's the difference between vehicles and cars? You know what I'm saying? But you could say, what's the difference between cars and trucks? So, Rag is simply the path of attachment. Rag means attachment. So Rag Anuga means you're following in the footsteps of those that have attachment. Those that have attachment are called Rag Atmika. Means the Rag is their life. So Rag Anuga means you follow in the footsteps of those, you follow the path, you follow the path of attachment in the footsteps of those that have attachment. That's Raga Nuga. And those that have attachments, that's Raga Atmika. Now there'll be a difference of explanation here, just perspective on how you look at it. Because is that some will take it that Raga Nuga means up to the point of prema. Means up to that point you're following the footsteps of those who have prema. Then when you have prema, then that becomes ragatmika, because then that prema becomes your inspiration. So that's a general definition, basically. But within that, there's a fine detail, is that actually, ultimately, I mean, to the next level, it means you can take this to two levels above this. The next one will be... the first level is anyone with prema is ragatmika. Anyone below that's raganuga. Then you could take it within prema, then the heads of the particular rasas, they are the real ragatmikas, because they actually have that love. and everybody else is raganuga, following in their footsteps. One shouldn't. Tenley tendency is raganuga is connotated with sadhana. So the tendency is to want to drop it as a definition. And ragatmika then becomes more clear that you know that means that. But raganuga is a principle that goes from the top all the way down. It pervades the whole path. So then that's the next level up. So therefore then, you know, the prominent gopis, you know, Mother Yashoda, Nanda Baba, and these, and then the prominent cowherd boys, and everyone else is following them. So technically they're raganuga, and those ones are ragatmika. Then you can take it to the topmost level, as Rupa Goswami mentions in the Nectar of Devotion, is there's only one ragatmika devotee, and that's Radharani. Everyone else is actually raganuga following. Right? So when it actually comes to rag, they're all following her, right? Like that. Even Krishna's following her, right? Because he comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, right? So she is the Ragatmika Bhakta. All the others are Raganuga, but within their Raganuga, they are the Ragatmika Bhakta for Raganuga in that particular flavor. Does that make sense? Means, as far as bhakti goes, Mother Yashoda is raganuga of Radharani. But as far as of that raganuga bhakti, that is parental rasa, she is the ragatmika bhakta. And then others follow her. Does that make sense? And then if you generalize it more, then in the path, then those who are situated and have that prema as their attachment, that attachment is mature to that point, then you could say those who don't have it are following the footsteps of those. Does that make sense? So you can look at this definition between raganu, ragatmika on these three levels.
Would it then be safe to say that the jiva is a raganuga and shakshitattva is ragatmika? Could the jiva become a ragatmika?
Depends on what level you're talking. If you're talking, defining it as prema, then you could say yes, they're ragatmika. But if you're defining it on the other two levels, no. Those spots are already taken. Jivas, one has to know the meaning of jiva. Jiva means that they are instrument. Right? They are never fully the object. Right? The object is through which you attain your goal. So Krishna's pleasure is attained through Radharani, Mother Yashoda, Sri Dham, Sudham, like this. The jivas expand to add to that, to highlight it. You know, it's just like, it would be the question would be, can the achar ever become the meal? No, it can add to a meal, but it never stands on its own as a meal. But it's too small, 1/10,000th tip of the hair, not much for, you know, the cosmic creation, you know. So point is the Swarup Shakti, that's why it says Swarup Shakti is the devotee, because Swarup Shakti is the same size as the Shaktiman. How big he is, she's that big. As soon as he expands, she's there. So she is the full, means, as he is the full Godhead, she is the full energy. Yeah. So therefore, we can only assist. And then expanding from her are these others. So these rasas being manifest in those personalities, they're the personification of those rasas. So then, that's always there. So jiva always is assisting. Always is assisting. Like that. But same time as energies, whoever expands from the one before them, they're always assisting the one before them. So as the gopis expand, then as they expand, they're helping the ones above them. Just like Balaram is helping Krishna. Because he's expanded from Krishna. So in the same ways, it works both in the Vishnu Tattva and the Shakti Tattva. So we're a detail of the Shakti Tattva, basically. We're a branch of that. Does that make some sense? Difference seems to be, it's just the nature. But both are important. Krishna keeps both on his chest. means the Srivatsa, that's the internal potency, and the Kastuba are the jivas. So they're always in Krishna's chest. They're never not there. So those are always in his heart. Does that make sense?
I can make one question?
Yeah.
Okay. I have a little question from you. For half a self-realization, what is more important? Study all the time, you don't have time, ni for coming to the temple, ni for making service. This is what is asking, sorry, but this is what is asking, you say what is asking for the temple. Eh? Or stay in the temple, make service, or make all your halana, no? Coming to Mongolati, coming to Govinda, coming to class, make service. To be humble and make sense, o sea, this is, or to be telescope, blah blah, I don't understand nothing for me, I don't understand nothing, this, I don't understand, pero for me the more important it is, I learn from Pankajani Prabhu and from Narayani Prabhu, I learn the more important is chant properly your japa, make service to be humble. This is the most important. You are not there. For me, I'm sorry. Many questions. After the practice, what is your chance? O sea, my practice, what is my practice? No? My practice must be, I think, it must be make service, help the devotees because the devotees are my family, no, or must be my family, no? Y chant properly my yapa, y eso. Y no more. But it's very simple to be devotee, I think. It's very simple. Only you must have your yapa, all the principles, no broke principles, service, and help the devotees, and no depresión. Pero hacer the devotees de my cuenta. After another. If you don't have the devotees, you can't help another. You think, no? Mm-hmm. I ask you because you are very big devotee. You know, you have big knowledge too, no? Me, no. No, I don't have too much knowledge. And then I ask you, what is more important, no?
So, the importance is to keep yourself engaged. Mm-hmm. So, that's the main point. So, as if one has. If by performance of the service with the proper attitude in the good association keeps you fully engaged, then that's what you want to do. But if someone has, certain intellectual needs that have to be fulfilled, then they have to study the shastras to fulfill that. The point is to keep body, mind, and words engaged. So whatever it takes to do that, then that's what's done. So if by studying and that kind of academic approach, that keeps them busy, then that's good. But the point is, maybe it has to be applied. So the knowledge needs to be applied at some point. So that has to be seen, because contemplation has to include application. But the point is everybody has their particular need to be engaged in devotional service. So, fundamental principles are there, common for everyone. Your sadhana, and basic studies, and social interactions, your etiquettes, your taking prasad, your particular service to the deity, then that's common for everyone. Then within that, then there's the specifics of the need. So Prabhupada always asks the devotee, what do you want to do for Krishna? And they would always say, oh, whatever you want. But then they would say, no, what do you want to do? Because what will engage your nature in the Lord's service? So then, if doing what you were speaking then keeps yourself busy and engaged, then that's what you should do. And if by that study and that keeps others engaged, then that's what they should do. So everybody has to find what works for them. That's the main thing. Because everybody's individual, so it's always going to be different. You know?
Some interesting point for this. Prabhupada actually established the whole system for us. We have a morning, we have a
Mangalarti, then we have a japa, we do chanting every day, and after we have Bhagavatam class, so we have also study included.
Yeah, so Prabhupada wanted study to be there, but it shouldn't be without practical application. So I think we'll probably end here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki Jai Prabhupada ki Jai Sarvita Bhaktivedanta Jai 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 Jai